We'll hear argument now in our third case of the morning, Krishna Pillai against Mukasey. Moran.
May it please
do not touch the microphone.
I'm sorry.
If you want to raise the podium, there's a switch on the right-hand side.
I think it's fine. May it please the court, my name is Viswanathan Rudrakumaran. I represent petitioner Sundar Krishna Pillai in this case. Your Honor, there are four issues in this case. First, whether the BIA erred in petitioner's argument that he is eligible for asylum under the pattern or practice theory. Second, whether the BIA erred on his argument that as a failed asylum seeker that he will be persecuted. Third, whether the BIA erred in the torture convention analysis based on the fact his ethnicity and the status as a failed asylum seeker. And number four, whether the BIA's credibility finding is sustained by substantial evidence. Our contention is, even if this court upheld the adverse credibility finding, that does not have any impact with respect to the other three claims, other three bases for asylum. In fact, with respect to pattern or practice theory, the BIA itself conceded that there is no need to be, the credibility finding should be there, with a positive credibility finding with respect to his past experience. Unlike this case, this court's decision in Elki versus Mukasey, in this case, the immigration judge found that he is in that group. He included in that group because his Tamil ethnicity was well established. Let me come to that point a little bit later. First, let me argue on the fact that his claim as a potential failed asylum seeker, he will be persecuted. First, the immigration judge did not address this issue at all.
But I thought, looking at that the evidence that he comes forward with to show that this is, in fact, some kind of defined group, it must be a defined social group, I guess, is quite weak. It seems to be just this one online newspaper article, and that's, of course, recounts a very unfortunate case. But I don't see why that incident creates a social group. It seems if the IJ didn't think there was enough evidence to go forward on that claim, there wasn't any real reason to discuss it.
You know, with respect to the social group claim, even the BIA did not address that issue at all. BIA did not address that issue in detail.
Well, I'm just saying, if there's nothing to support this failed asylum seeker claim, then whatever discussion failings there may have been really don't change the ultimate result.
Well, the response is under SEC versus the Supreme Court finding. The first, the agency should address that issue. And here the agency, BIA said it's weak. The BIA did not say at all that it cannot be a basis for asylum. But in fact, in Ramachari versus Ashcroft, the Second Circuit remanded this case on that basis. A similar fact pattern, a Sri Lankan Tamil asylum seeker found adverse credibility finding, the Second Circuit remanded. So our contention is that the immigration judge or the BIA has to address that issue, whether it's a social group or not, but without addressing that issue, the BIA cannot simply dismiss that case. First of all, the BIA does not have the power. It's not a fact-finding body.
Well, but I mean, if I'm understanding your theory correctly, you think there needs to be a grant of a petition for review every time a theory is raised that the BIA doesn't discuss. Is that correct? That would be the logical implication of your Chenery point, I think.
But here, in this case, you know, the BIA addressed the issue, first of all. So BIA said it's a weak claim. BIA did not state, but how do you know that interest was not, that issue was not litigated fully at the agency level? That issue was not litigated fully at the agency level for this court to then review whether BIA's decision is right or wrong.
The BIA had the agency record in front of it, I assume.
Yeah, but the BIA only in a footnote, you know, BIA in a cursory manner said that it may not be a social group. BIA did not specifically say it will not constitute a social group. But then we can argue, on the matter of Acosta, the petitioner can argue that it constitutes a particular social group. But that did not take place.
I think the hardest problem is that the case was resolved on an assessment of Mr. Krishnapillai's credibility. And even though opinions may vary as to the significance of some of the discrepancies that the IJ cited in finding him to be not credible, the IJ, I mean, I don't know that we could ever say that the IJ's reasoning was irrational or rested on inappropriate considerations.
I agree with you, Honor. So arguendo, the IJ's adverse credibility finding is supported by substantial evidence. Our contention, it does not impact the petitioner's claim under the other three categories. It does not affect his claim because the IJ found that he is a Tamil. That finding IJ made him. And then we put some evidence to show that he, in fact, he himself stated in his application that as a failed asylum seeker, he will be subject to persecution. So our contention, the IJ should have adjudicated that claim, or BIA should have remanded to IJ. That's one prong. The second prong regarding the pattern or practice claim, the BIA said, maybe IJ's adverse credibility finding is fine, is supported, but it does not affect his claim under the pattern or practice theory. But the BIA dismissed on a different ground. So when I move from, before I come to pattern of practice, I also would like to address the CAT claim. As this court said in Mansoor versus INS, it said distinct and separate analysis the CAT claim. He is not basing the same, the CAT claim is not based on his past experience. CAT claim is based on the fact that he is a Tamil, and that factor alone, or combination of the factor as a failed asylum seeker. That has nothing to do with his past experience. So arguendo, his past experience is totally fabricated. It's totally false. But that does not have any impact on his claim on the CAT, because this, as this court said, and the Mansoor versus INS, should have a separate claim, separate analysis. Then let me move to the pattern and practice argument. The pattern and practice argument, the BIA itself said, the adverse credibility finding has no impact on the pattern of practice.
Then, well, I understand that finding, I mean, or that theory, I should say, to be what I think of as, you know, the Nazi extermination of the Jews, or the ethnic cleansing that was going on, something that is so pervasive and so awful that simply to be a member of the group is to be at risk, so that you're entitled to relief. But the agency here says, although, of course, the record shows that there are serious problems for the Tamils, and I would say in that part of the country especially, that it's not quite that bad. Now, these are difficult lines to draw, but why doesn't that mean it's the agency's to do?
You know, first of all, here is an application of law to undisputed facts. So our position...
Well,
it's de novo review. It's not a substantial
review. I don't think that's right. I mean, actually, in our court, at least, generally mixed questions do receive deferential review. And here, especially, agency expertise is going to be important, isn't it? I mean, you're drawing these lines that are a bit ghoulish to draw. I mean, is it so extreme as to be Holocaust-like, or is it really just merely awful, you know? And that's a tough line.
And let me address, you know, two problems. First, arguendo, it should be a higher standard, arguendo. Then UNHCR report says not a single Tamil should be sent back. All Tamil, they use the magic words. The UNHCR 2006 report used the magic words that the court's been looking for. The court said widespread. No Tamils from the northeast. Tamils in Colombo. What else form of evidence we need? Moreover, the regulation was intent to liberalize the asylum claim. If the court thinks that it might open a floodgates, that the regulation itself opened the floodgates. For with all due respect to the, what the court has to do is analyze the facts and apply the law here. And the court cannot get hypothesize that if you grant asylum for one person under this theory, that everybody will be here knocking on the door. Because the regulation was intent to liberalize. And if you look, I have quoted in the Refugee Convention, the U.S. position was during the convention that we'll take everybody. So the pattern and the what the BIA said this is a human right. There may be a pattern on practice of human rights violation.
No, I understand what you're saying, but I think there's an institutional competence issue here, which is whether the right location to make the decision that Tamils, for example, in the northeast part, are entitled to this kind of relief, or whether it's the Court of Appeals is the issue on the table. You're arguing it should be the Court of Appeals. The government argues that the institutional competence is in the BIA.
But arguing whether we agree to that argument, then our argument is that the record is compelling. The record is compelling, so even the BIA's analysis, because the BIA said there may be a pattern and practice of human rights violation. So BIA trying to distinguish human rights violation from persecution. But that's not the case, because the AG himself has said when there are human rights violations, that constitute persecution. And the government, the respondent argues that in non-international armed conflict, there cannot be a persecution. That is also not true. The BIA itself addressed in matter of Bulata that persecution takes place in the context of a civil war. So two-prong argument. You know, one is that it's a de novo review, but even if the court says that it's a substantial evidence standard, our position is that the UNHCR report, Your Honor, it's really a compelling evidence. They use all the magic words take look by the courts in this case. In Ilki versus Mukasey, this honorable court held that there is a pattern and practice of persecution of homosexuals in that country. This court made that finding. But it doesn't result. The court did not say that we cannot make that finding, only the agency can. The court did not say. The court made a finding. There's a pattern and practice of homosexuals in that country. So that's a similar argument I'm making here. I did not press the button, so I don't know how many minutes I'm left on.
Still have some time. They'll turn it on, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you.
You have more than three, that's for sure.
So on the pattern and practice, and those are the main arguments, Your Honor. And then when we come to the credibility issue, Your Honor, our position is Real ID Act does not really change much. And it takes only two instances that even though it's not doesn't go to the heart of the claim, it can be taken into consideration and though no presumption of credibility. But we have to take all the facts into consideration. The BIA initially identified four factors. The first, the BIA itself said it's a slip. Then second factor, the BIA said that he testified like that. When we pointed out that he did not testify like that, it was a manufactured inconsistency, the government argued that based on the calculation of the immigration judge. And the third one, they're saying is implausibility of escaping from the camp. And the government position is there can be an alternative scenario, but that does not mean that it is not implausible. We beg to differ. With respect to adverse credibility finding, there can be alternative scenario. But with respect to plausibility, as this court said, there must be inherently not probable. So if there's an alternative scenario, our position is that plausibility finding cannot withstand. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Evans.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Manning Evans. I represent the government in this matter. Just to respond to a few points made by petitioner's counsel, I'd point out that the BIA's decision, I think, makes very clear that they recognize that their credibility determination is not entirely dispositive of the case, that they were willing to look at the background evidence that the petitioner offered and to see what kind of situation Tamils face in Sri Lanka. And it's an unfortunate situation there, but it is not a situation of pervasive, widespread, systemic persecution.
But, you know, talking about the credibility, I'd like to, you know, ask you about the purported implausibility of the escape. In the reply brief, there is a pointing to the testimony that he knew at least one of the guards and that people were allowed to come and go from the camp. And my question to you is, were those aspects of his testimony ignored by the AJ and the board? in deeming the account of his escape implausible? Sure seems like it.
Your Honor, I don't think there's any clear indication that it was ignored. I think that the immigration judge's decision here is certainly a thorough one, and I think the board's is as well. I would point the court to page 181 of the administrative record, and at that point the petitioner says something very unusual. He says that he was waiting for the chance to get out of the camp. Now, that was a very odd remark, considering that he later said that he wanted to go out and get cigarettes at 4 a.m. in the morning. I think that the agency's conclusion that it was an implausible story was entirely reasonable, especially when you look at the various stories that seem to be evolving during the petitioner's testimony.
I don't know that I find that all that unusual. Now, if he had the right friend on duty at 4 o'clock in the morning, that would put the cigarettes.
Well,
that would precisely be the opportunity he's looking for.
Perhaps, Your Honor, but he also did say that he was able to come, or that someone was able to come and go with a fairly regular basis. So I think that there's at least a tension there with his statement that he was waiting for a chance to get out. I think that the agency was reasonable in saying it was an implausible story.
I don't find it the least bit implausible. Not the least bit implausible.
Well, it was to get cigarettes at 4 in the morning, Your Honor.
Anything at 4 in the morning if that's when you can make
in a situation where the camp is surrounded by guards, there's a fence, the Tamil Tigers had gone out to forcibly enforce the petitioner's attendance at the camp. I think there are several indications to show that there's a reasonable ground for the agency's conclusion that it's implausible. And it's only one factor in many factors considered by the agency in finding the petitioner not credible.
But I want to go back to the pattern or practice claim, because you said, Sri Lanka is a bad place for Tamils, but it's not so bad as to rise to the, or sink, if you will, to the level of the kind of persecution necessary for a pattern or practice claim. But your opponent rightly points out that your opinion is not shared by the UN High Commissioner on Refugees, for example, who thinks that in this northeastern part of the country, it is that bad, that merely to be Tamil is to be subjected to severe human rights deprivations.
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the UN report actually says that it's targeted Tamils who should not be returned. And we do not have a Tamil who has been targeted in this case. I don't believe so. I believe that what we have here is someone who was randomly caught up in a sweep. He admitted that he was arrested, I believe, with 5 other people at the hotel in Colombo. And there's really, I don't believe, any other indication in the record that he was specifically targeted by either the army or the police in Sri Lanka.
But he's there. I have to tell you, Mr. Evans, that's my idea of being targeted, being schlepped off to, prison camp. It was my idea of being targeted.
Well, Your Honor, that was the Tiger Tamils that took him off. And if he's not going back to that particular area, to an LTTE-controlled area of Sri Lanka, he at least can avoid that event from happening. Your Honor, I would also, regarding the UN report, when the UN says that problems in Sri Lanka are widespread,
don't send anyone back, they say.
Well, they're recommending that. They're recommending that all asylum applications be given serious consideration. And I think that's exactly what the petitioner received here.
Right. I mean, it's a huge responsibility. Every time you're wrong, you may be sending someone back to his death.
Yes.
That's a pretty awful responsibility to bear.
Yes, it is, Your Honor. It is. At the same time, the agency is charged with making this decision on hundreds of cases, and we need a system that works and one that is able to draw these lines. And in this case, the immigration judge specifically indicated how concerned he was about making drawing those kinds of lines in this case. I think this is exactly the kind of immigration judge and BIA decision that this court has been asking for in some of the opinions that have been critical of the agency.
Well, I don't know about that. Some of the discrepancies that the IJ cited in finding him not credible certainly worry me. And, this insistence on corroboration, I mean, we've got, you know, that decision in New York by the immigration judge in New York, which found that there is a pattern and practice in Sri Lanka of persecuting these people. And it seems to me that that decision would suggest that there isn't as great a need as this particular IJ saw to corroborate accounts of what happened to him in particular. And, you know, the corroboration that was sought seems to me to be very difficult.
Well, Your Honor, if I may respond, I believe the Court is raising two different points. One is the IJ decision that was attached to the reply brief. Of course, we have a variety of procedural objections to that. It's a first issue or first time raised in reply, and it's new material and that sort of thing. But the immigration judge in that decision issued their decision in one paragraph. We don't know what the evidence was that the judge was relying on. We don't know what evidence was offered by the government to rebut it. And then it hasn't been reviewed by the Board of Immigration Appeals. In fact, the 800 number that the agency officers offers indicates that there was no appeal filed in that case. So all we have is one immigration judge decision, and it's hard to say why the judge issued that decision in that particular case. With respect to the corroboration, Your Honor, I think that in this case it's actually a very important aspect because, in fact, the immigration judge wanted something from petitioner's wife. His wife was present when the Tamil Tigers came out and took him to the camp. She went to Colombo and tried to get him out of jail and succeeded. So she was present in important aspects during the case. And yet, when he offered something from the wife, it wasn't anything about what happened in the Tigers coming out to their house, or it wasn't anything about going to get her husband out of jail. It was simply a statement that unknown people had come to her house. So, in fact, she's actually contradicting the petitioner's claim. In addition, the petitioner admitted that he had received a letter from his wife, but he wasn't willing to offer it into evidence. He simply said it's a personal letter. He also admitted that he threw away another letter that explained why the wife was unavailable. Apparently, he had been told by someone that his wife was avoiding the army and moving from place to place. But apparently, even knowing that he needed to preserve evidence, he throws that letter away instead of providing
it. Well, maybe he threw it away because he knew that that would be her death warrant.
Well, Your Honor, he didn't explain why he threw it away. Regarding the UN report, Your Honor, I just wanted to return to that briefly, and I'd simply say that that the UN described several unfortunate events that happen, but it's not all persecution. They describe harassment. They describe discrimination. Those things may be widespread. At the same time, they may be widespread, but they do not rise to the level of persecution, at least not to show the kind of horrific Holocaust-type persecution that's required for a pattern or practice claim. And I'd also point out that in fact, the State Department report in this case shows we have Tamil representatives in the parliament in Sri Lanka. We have 2,000 Tamils repatriated from India, apparently without incident. So there are at least indications that that we do not have there is no compelling evidence to find a pattern or practice here.
Do you ever learn what happens to the people that are people like this that are sent back?
Your Honor, in my experience, no. I've never learned anything more about people returning. That does remind me, though, that the court makes a very good point in observing how thin the evidence is in support of the returning as a failed asylum seeker. My review of the record also revealed that Internet article is the only evidence that's offered in support. And, in fact, that Internet article doesn't even mention that the person had applied for asylum. It simply says that they had been returned to Sri Lanka. And we don't know the source of the information. How did this Internet site learn of this information? So, really, it's virtually no evidence at all, especially in light of the fact that the only other evidence offered in support of the claim is the petitioner's own testimony. which I believe the agency reasonably found not to be credible. If the court has no other questions, the government would ask that the petition for review be denied.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Thank you
very much.
Anything further?
Yes, briefly, Your Honor. Yes, I would. With respect to the UNHCR report, it did not merely say that those applications should be considered. It said they should be favorably considered. And with respect to the returning asylum seekers, Your Honor raised the point about the membership, whether it constitutes a protected ground. Arguably, it doesn't constitute a protected ground. It is a basis for CAT analysis. So even if that's not there, then it should come there. And also, the another one about the implausibility, the government failed to mention that the whole area was controlled by the Tigers at that time. So he was going to a coffee shop, in fact, controlled by the Tigers. So it's not a big thing. It's not like an escape that's portrayed by the government. It was a whole area. He just went there to buy a coffee, a cigarette, which was also controlled by the Tigers. And the State Department report, that was 2005 report. Here, what we are talking about, what happened in 2006, and what we are talking about, the UNHCR report in 2006, and in fact, the IJ's opinion in the New York case, he mentioned the current conditions. That makes a difference, and that distinguished this case from Rasiya versus INS, because Rasiya was a 2002 case, different fact pattern. Here is a current condition. That makes a big difference in this case, Your Honor. And regarding the internet and everything, those arguments were not raised by the IJ or the BIA, so the government cannot raise that argument in the first time. That's all, Madam. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.